Welcome to Tequila, the show where we get drunk.
And you listen, motherfucker.
That's how you like it, bitch.
Oh, man.
Okay. That was pretty intense.
Yeah, we're starting. We're
definitely departing from our old format with a new aggressive redesign.
Yeah, man. We had such a precedent, too. Like,
yeah, we're not going to talk about tech anymore. We're going to record ourselves savagely beating homeless people for the entirety of the episode, and then we'll sign off as we're shit-faced.
Making America a better place.
Make America great again. Beat the homeless.
God, okay, let's stop over it. Oh, shit. Okay.
Anyway, bum fights aside, what do you want to start with?
We need to take a shot, motherfucker.
Oh, God. I have a timer here, too. Do you want to be the one to time it, or do you want me to?
No, you do it. If you have it set up, you do it.
All right. Well, let's do it. On three, one, two, tequila. To anyone who's interested, Dan is drinking jalapeno-infused tequila that he made himself, like some bootleg underground alcoholic firework shit.
Dog, all I did was take two jalapenos, cut them up a little bit, and I put them in my tequila. That was only 2 days ago. It's not even that, like, infused.
No, it's not that spicy. All right.
It's spicy. It's not that spicy.
Now I feel like an asshole for playing it out this much.
Oh, no. I mean, it's spicy, dude. I'm feeling it. I'm absolutely feeling it. I'm feeling it more in my gut than my, like, throat. I mean, I'm still feeling it in my throat, by the way.
Yeah, see, I'm not a masochist, so I think I'll pass on that. I'm drinking tequila 512.
Did you say masochist? Like, you're not like a Jewish masochist? Like, what is that?
Yeah, no, I eat matzo balls all day long, motherfucker.
You're not a masochist.
Like 300 pounds.
That's funny.
All right, so we have a couple topics today. Maybe it's a little more refined than last time. We've had more time to prepare for it, or we've spent more time preparing for it, at least.
Marginally.
Well, why don't we play softball to start with, and we'll talk about the new Star Wars movie.
Yay! Okay, I was actually surprised as to like why the fuck we didn't talk about this in the first episode, but I suppose it's not like
I hadn't seen it yet. Oh yeah, I'd just seen it back then.
Yeah, you had seen it. You definitely had, and you, on your bootleg ass
cam rip.
Should we talk about how you haven't seen it in theaters, and that's like the place to see a Star Wars film? Like,
man, what the fuck is wrong with you? I'm so introverted it hurts. Like, I'm not gonna go to a public place to see something like this. I don't have the time.
See the movie.
Yeah, but she's an introvert too. We're just two fucking homebodies.
Have to like socialize in the movie theater. It's the movie theater. Like,
it's not the socializing, man. It's the getting in the car and going places.
Oh, that's not introverted either. I mean, that's not extroverted either. That's just lazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not denying that.
Come on, man. Okay.
Yeah, so I watched a shitty-ass Mexican cam rip that had periodic Hispanic subtitles. The subtitles are ethnically Hispanic. They're in English, but they're brown as fuck.
There you go.
But, it was good. I liked it. I liked it a whole lot, actually. I mean, it felt like, you know, it had just the right, like, amount of
okay, this is obvious, sorry, but, like, for our one listener, hi, Mauricio. spoilers for the movie? Like, if you haven't seen it, fuck you.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, you can deal with that too late on your own.
Well, you should have seen it by now, fuck you. Yeah. Okay, the movie was great. Like, I thought it was fucking amazing, but I, like, anytime new, I mean, like, I am a huge Star Wars nerd. Like, I grew up on Star Wars as a child, and so, like, as soon as I saw the trailer for this, I, like, jizzed myself.
Yeah, I mean, to put it in perspective, I am less of a fanboy. Like, I enjoyed the Star Wars movies. Like, I thought they were cool because I'm a sci-fi fan, but I wasn't like coming my pants jizzing all over myself excited. It really, really surprised me, and it like defied my expectations of it being a campy ass capitalizing on the brand type of thing. It was well written. I mean, so you know, the characters were pretty well developed. I really like how John Boyega's character really like stepped up to the plate, and he developed throughout the course of the series from just being like a doubter of the regime to like being someone who actively took a part in the rebel uprising.
How did you feel about Rey and what's his face? Kylo Ren.
Look, I mean, it's like I'm biased because I have like a huge crush on Daisy Ridley.
Okay.
And so, you know, I thought she was incredible. Like, I really enjoyed her acting, and I thought, you know, she was just the right mix of, like, spunky survivor and, like, idealistic get out there and change the world. And as for Kylo Ren, like, it really depends. My feelings on it depend on how they develop the character. If they keep running with this, like, idea of an emotionally tortured guy who's on the side of the Force or on the dark side of the Force, and, you know, he's struggling with his own decisions on that side, then I will love that character. I think that's, like, the that's, like, the ideal character for Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. So I fucking love, I mean, I love Daisy Ridley's character. I love Rey. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's hot. I mean, I don't know if I have a huge crush on her. She's cute. I love her. Her character is cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Because of the mirroring they do with her and Anakin and Luke.
Yeah.
You know, like they, you know, how Anakin and Luke are supposed to mirror each other. You know, the prequels mirror the mm-hmm. original trilogy, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, the fact that she's on a desert planet in, like, a certain type of garb, and so were Anakin and Luke in the first movies, and they kind of have to deal with their, like, burgeoning powers throughout the movie. You know, there's a lot of those themes. Even, the part in the end where she wins out in the like force grabbing of Luke's lightsaber in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fucking not a flashback, but an illusion with an A.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's like, you know, four. George Lucas established a sort of framework for this coming trilogy of Star Wars movies, and I think J.J. Abrams and the writer, whose name I can't remember, did a really good job of sort of integrating that framework, but really incorporating things that made it a unique and interesting movie just by itself without context.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. And I love talking about Kylo Ren. He is my favorite bad guy in the entire Star Wars universe right now. I like him a little more than Vader right now. Like, just a smidge.
Really?
Because of the conflicted nature of the thing. Because of the whole, like, imposter syndrome thing he's going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Am I really Sith? Like, you know, am I the guy?
Kind of thing.
Yeah, because he comes from, like, the ideal light side father, Han Solo. Like, you know, Han Solo talks shit and he's kind of a bad boy, but in the end, like, he's just like Luke, you know, perfect good. Mm-hmm. And so him killing him to deal with his internal struggle over that was really well done.
And so when I first watched it, I had a couple, there are, like, some plot points that, I don't know. There were some plot holes, but the plot holes reflected the original trilogy in my mind, such as the time that. So the woman that plays Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones was that Captain Phasma lady.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There are a bunch of other cameos, by the way. Let me get back to her. I'll tell you about the other cameos. Daniel Craig was in it.
Yeah, that one I know, and that is hilarious.
Yeah. Daniel Craig was a stormtrooper that got, Jedi mind control, tricked?
Yeah, no, he was the one in the scene where Daisy Ridley repeatedly tries
to get the
stormtrooper to release her restraints and drop his weapon at the end. And, I mean, it wasn't even, like, I don't think it has been publicly confirmed. It was the guy from, what was it? The comic zombie movie that it's a comedy duo.
He was also in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. He was Scotty.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was Scotty in J.J. I forget his name.
What is his name? I can't remember his name for the life of me.
British guy.
Shaun of the Undead.
Yeah, that guy. I see. You know what, listeners? If you don't see it, fuck you. Go Google it.
Simon Pegg.
That's his fucking
name. Yeah, yeah. Simon Pegg, like, outed Daniel Craig, whose names apparently rhyme, and I just realized this.
Simon Pegg was in, yes, they do. Simon Pegg was in the suit. I forget the name of the character. It's the guy who gives Rey the rations. The food.
I mean, this movie is, like, you know, just masturbatory fodder for a cinemaphile.
It's
like,
so good!
It's
fucking good. Okay, I need to talk about, like, fan theories and shit. Okay, wait. Let me finish with my problems. And then, like, how I'm okay with them for the most part. Captain Phasma,
pour your next shot, bitch.
he had like no role whatsoever. Oh shit, we're doing this.
We are. You know we are.
All right.
10 minutes in.
Countdown.
I mean, we're already past the point. Just do it.
Oh, okay. 3, 2, 1, jalapeno. Okay.
Ooh, that's stout.
Okay, so Captain Phasma.
Oh god.
Yeah, so
man, it really throws like a wrench in the conversation when we have to take a shot. It's like, you know, walking through a doorway, that level of disconnect.
I know, like I'm stumbling as I talk. So what I didn't like was like when they go to fucking whatever the new Star Destroyer, not Star Destroyer, the new Death Star is. What did they call it?
The planet? I have no idea.
Star Killer. Look, man, they call it Star Killer.
Star Killer, that's right, that's right.
It's just a fucking giant Death Star. That's a planet. When they get in, Captain Phasma, which is the female shiny stormtrooper lady, puts up like no fight despite them being like brainwashed into their cause or whatever, like brainwashed for the cause since being like a toddler. Like, come on, she should put up some sort of a fight. Like, not just like, okay, I'll lower the shield. Like, whatever.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, you know, if every time that, well, it honestly, though, to me, if she did put up a fight, it would just feel like, you know, filler. It would be just more opportunity.
It was filler, though. Like, that whole, well, no, it was like a shortcut to get the shields down, that whole thing.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, they probably, like...
had X amount of time they needed to fill.
Exactly. And, I mean, they needed to solve this plot point. And so, here's this lady that we've introduced before, which is a key point. You're not just getting some random stormtrooper to bring down the shields.
I would have preferred a random stormtrooper at that point. Because, like, here's a strong female character that ends up just being weak and doesn't do anything. But
by the way, speaking of stormtroopers, the one who fights
with the Boyega, fucking baton.
That was incredible. That was because cool. Like it's not just a fight for the sake of a fight. It's like this guy who's been betrayed. This is one of his former comrades.
Wait. And point, why couldn't that have been Captain Phasma?
True that. I think that would have been really good. Yeah, especially if they fought on equal terms.
Yes. And then, like,
I'd
she
like
had
to see
like,
some Brienne of Tarth like ass kicking from Captain Phasma.
I know, that's my point. Like, I really fell short. And when I was downtown with my girlfriend Sadie at some point, and we went to the Disney store just because I wanted to jizz all over the fucking Star Wars merch.
And then subsequently get carted away for being a pedophile.
Right. And, there was a shit ton of Captain Phasma merch. And then after watching the movie, I was like, why?
Why?
She didn't do anything. Why are you selling Captain Phasma merch? Whatever. Okay, so, but like, okay, to be fair, and again, to make the to be fair argument, that type of plot hole was done in the original trilogy, I think at least once or twice.
But yeah, like, but I mean, like, I feel like
Stormtrooper being hijacked and doing the thing, you know, lowering the shield or whatever. You know, that thing has happened before in the series. So, whatever. One problem I had that has since been rectified is that when your boy Kylo Ren and Rey fight at the end, somehow Rey, who just discovered her force powers, like, 4 hours previous.
Hours. I know. I already know the point you're gonna make.
You know what I mean? Like, dude.
Yeah. No.
It's dude, like, in the opening scene, pauses a fucking bullet, like nonchalantly as fuck, holds it there for like half an hour without even like fucking sweating. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And, no. It's like it's definitely dramatic equalization here.
No, I know. And he also talking about the same girl. When he finds her in the woods previously before that fight and she has the gun, he like pauses her, right, with his force powers, just holds her in place. And then as he's walking around her, just knocks her out by snapping his fucking fingers.
And then here he is struggling against this self-same like child in the force.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Although like, you know, I'm going to propose a shitty fan theory here. His master, his Sith master, is the shadowy...
Supreme Leader Snoke.
Snoke. Reminds me of... I don't know if you've ever seen the Indian People Facebook subreddit, but...
Oh, God.
Oh God, it's fantastic. there's like this Indian woman holding a gigantic boa constrictor, and she posted a picture of herself on Facebook, and she's like, "Hiss, I am Snek, S-N-E-K," and that's all I could think of when I read his name. But anyway, like, you know, traditionally on the dark side of the Force, there's always been two Sith: the Master and the Apprentice. And the Apprentice, in the end, always kills the Master. So why the fuck would you train your apprentice in proper sword fighting?
Not always. The only instance of that happening was, what's his face? Sidious. That's the only time.
Well, also, I mean, although I guess this has been nuked from the canon, but from Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, what's yeah. His face? Yeah, the EU is done. But yes, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Sith trope that, you know, there's only two treachery. And one kills the other. Like, because yeah. The whole thing is based
but
on being an asshole.
To be fair, with these new dark side force users, they're kind of doing away with the idea of quote unquote Sith traditionally.
Yeah, true that. I mean, he's not, you know, he's Sith a Kylo Ren. He's just the dark side of the Force.
Yeah. The new order name is just the Knights of Ren, and so he adopted that surname, the Ren surname.
I mean, Solo would be a little hard to explain to your coworkers.
I mean, he kind of dropped his old identity, you know, Ben Solo.
Yeah, of course.
Ben Solo exists no longer. Also, I love that Ben Solo becomes Kylo Ren. I mean, there's a lot of mirroring in those names.
Really?
Yeah. Kylo Ren, Ben, Kylo Solo.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if that's intentional or coincidental, but
I think it's intentional. But nice catch. Ren, the Knights of Ren, also there are like multiple dark side force users that are like under his command that we haven't seen.
How do you know this?
Because you see that scene where she touches the lightsaber.
No, you're right. In her like force prophetic vision.
Yeah. Like he sees the scene where Kylo Ren murders all of Luke's like apprentices or whatever.
His academy.
He has some motherfuckers rolling with him that also...
I think it's actually called the Order of Ren. I read up the wiki.
Knights of Ren, I'm telling you.
Yeah, the Knights of Ren, pardon me. But, you know, the novelization of the movie apparently expounds on some topics that aren't covered.
And I actually want to get into that. I might.
Shit, man, it's like, I understand why they nuked the extended universe. Like, there was a lot of stuff in there that was just kind of masturbatory.
To be fair, though, Kylo Ren is based on another, I forget the name, but there's a son of Han Solo and Leia in the extended universe in one of the books.
Oh, shit.
Who is I don't know if he's explicitly a dark force user. Like, I don't know if he explicitly gets corrupted. But what happens to him is that he ends up somehow being able to... You know how Kylo Ren is not, like, he's not harnessing both light and dark side. He's being torn apart by one or the other while exclusively either using one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
This particular character is somehow, without being either light or dark, able to harness both powers simultaneously and use them simultaneously.
Huh.
Which is fucking sweet.
Well, if that's the direction Abrams takes the series, I will be more than satisfied.
He's not doing the next movies. He only did the first one.
Who's directing the next one?
I forget. They're doing one different director every movie.
Well, that has the potential. Well, is the writer common?
I think, yeah. I think the writer's the same. The directors are different.
Well, you know, okay. As long as, like, the underlying plot cohesion and themes aren't touched, I don't really give a shit.
Wait, so talking about, like, why it was okay that Kylo Ren lost to Rey, other than plot, what I read in the script was that his act of killing his father actually fucking weakened him as opposed to making him stronger significantly. Like, the act of killing his father causes further dichotomy in him and a further fissure in him.
I mean, yeah, like, if the theory is that he was utilizing part of the light side of the Force while his dad was alive and then he killed him, that makes sense.
Yeah, so the act of his father... You know, immediately after weakened him significantly. And then on top of it, because he got shot mortally by fucking Chewbacca, which I love that scene, by the way.
Yeah, it was great.
The Chewie Ridge. Right.
Well, let's move. This is tech Keela and not shitty fan theories Keela.
No, this is Star Wars Keela.
All right, Dan has hijacked this podcast and we found a new direction. Goodbye, ladies and gentlemen. Say goodbye to Tequila and welcome back to Chewbacca.
There you go. You're way better at it than me.
Shit, man. I've had years of practice. And also, coincidentally, when you look at the waveform of that, it's like a perfect sine wave.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay. All right, buds. All right. We got a ton of other stuff to cover. And yeah. I mean, I have a ton of alcohol left. So really, that's no excuse. So why don't we move on to this predictive data analysis story in the Pacific Standard magazine. Oh, God. What the fuck? Stop, stop, stop. Cut it out.
Calm down. Just take the shot.
Was that you or me?
That was you, bro.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus Christ, man. I need to lower the volume. For fuck's sake.
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Yeah, I have the shot ready.
All right.
Oh,
you ready?
God.
You count.
3, 2, 1, shot.
Oh, this jalapeno is catching up on me. So you wanted to talk about our...
No. Let's do the Pacific Standard bit on like minority report as predictive modeling.
Do it.
So yeah, this is a bit more up my alley. This is an article in the Pacific Standard that'll be linked in the description of the podcast, and essentially what it's saying or talking about is. The Los Angeles County decided to implement a program for 3 years that was essentially – it worked within their foster care system. And what they did was using data from the periodic evaluation of kids who are in the foster care system, they wanted to determine which kids were most at risk for juvenile delinquency and then head off the crossing over, as they call it, which – refers to the crossing over of kids from the foster system to the Los Angeles criminal system. And it's a really interesting article that evaluates this DPP, which is the Delinquency Prevention Pilot, and talks about its risks and benefits. So to start with, the Delinquency Prevention Pilot, from now on I'll call it the DPP, was evaluated. The reason this is coming up now is because even though the DPP ended in 2014, that was when its third cohort of kids was taken care of and they stopped the program. This year, the National Council on Crime and Delinquency, the NCCD, filed a report on the program. And what they wrote was very positive because essentially what they found was They evaluated three cohorts. The first one was a baseline, the second one was a control, and the third one was the test case. And what they found was that in the third cohort of kids that were exposed to this data analysis prevention program, we're not preventing data analysis, but rather we're using data analysis to prevent crime.
It's just poorly named.
Well, there were far fewer arrests. And essentially, what this group is arguing is that this is pretty good evidence that this program should be continued.
How do they? I don't understand. Like, why? Like, what are they? What are they doing that prevents that like makes the amount of arrests go down?
So essentially, all right. So in this program, what happens is, you know, as kids are put through the foster care system, a lot of data is collected on them. You know, about whether they come from an abusive household, whether or not they have drug abuse problems, or they've been exposed to drugs in the past, whether or not they've been arrested in the past. And, you know, all this is recorded, but not much was done with it prior to this. And then kids are rehomed within the foster care system. And the way the Los Angeles County foster care system works is they have a very specific contract. Like, for example, you know, foster parents will have a contract stating that between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m., the kids have to be at school. And after that, the foster parents have to pick them up. And so essentially what the DPP did is by intaking all of this data about the kids and continuing data about, you know, how the kids were doing, whether or not they said they had a positive role model to look up to, whether or not they used drugs again since they were rehomed into foster care. Some kids were designated as high risk, and whenever they were designated high risk, so in the first stage of the program, the baseline, nothing was done. The data was just collected and then stored. In the second stage, the control, the data was again, collected and stored. And then the third stage, the data was used to the data was analyzed, and there was like a 10-part analytical formula, and that was used to send messages to the social workers who run the program and tell them, hey, this kid is at risk. You should, you know, intervene and maybe like adjust the contract with their foster parent, or, you know, talk to them about other options for like extracurricular activities or things they could do. And I forgot where I was going with this. Tequila's taking effect. What did you even ask me in the first place?
Just like what made the amount of arrests go down?
Yeah, essentially, I mean, what they're doing is trying to figure out what kids are going to fall into crime ahead of time and then intervene to prevent them from doing so. So, Minority Report.
What does the intervening look like, though?
I mean, for the Los Angeles County system, it consists of really just a social worker visit, checking up on how the kid is doing and what their home environment is like, and then proactively trying to adjust it to make sure that their well-being is doing well.
That seems good.
Because, yeah, it is. And because prior to this, you know, there are three facets for guiding how they did, how they cared for foster children, which was permanency, safety, and well-being. And essentially, you know, apparently well-being wasn't really that big of a component of it. They were worried about permanency and safety, which are logical things to worry about. But they were really ignoring the kids' well-being, and recent studies have showed that the well-being of kids who are in foster care plays a huge role in whether they develop into functioning adults that are a part of society or whether they become a part of the criminal justice system and never leave.
Right.
And so this was really intended, after the intervention was flagged on the part of the social workers, what they did was try and ensure the well-being of the kids by, say, like encouraging them to take part in an after-school activity like lacrosse or choir. And they would amend the contract with the foster parents, who in a lot of cases would say, you know, fuck this. I said I'd pick them up at 3 a.m. I'm picking them up at 3 p.m. I'm picking them up at 3 p.m. in the contract. And I'm not gonna adjust my schedule for these fucking bitch ass foster kids.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's these minor modifications in a system that's really overburdened, where the social workers have way too many cases to take care of to try and do well by the kids while not increasing the burden on the social workers.
Yeah. Okay.
And with that note, I'm gonna take a quick break because I need to put on a sweater because I'm about to go out and smoke my ass off. See you in a bit.
You should take a shot before you do that.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. Dan said it, so here we are. I'm sitting outside with a cigarette, but I have to go back in for a shot.
Well, because you spent like 2 minutes doing weird Cookie Monster voices, then that counts as 10 minutes.
Let's not talk about that, Dan. I'm okay with this.
That was terrible.
Where the fuck is my... Oh, fuck you, Dan. I am not okay with this level of banter.
God, you sound like one of the wild things.
Oh, suddenly you're not a fan? You were telling me, oh, you should do this shit like 2 seconds ago.
I was. More like a minute, but yeah.
You just set me up, you fucking bully. I've poured my shot.
Me too.
Well, 3, 2, 1, Cookie Monster.
Oh, note to self, do habaneros next time. They taste way better than jalapenos.
I don't know, man. I'm just not a huge fan of jalapenos in general.
Yeah, jalapeno. You know what? If I'm going to go for a pepper, it's going to be a habanero.
I mean, that's brave of you. If I'm going to go for a pepper, it'll be Bell. Like,
gay?
Mom Bell.
Yo, I'm Cuban. We put bell peppers in, like, all our food.
I prefer my peppers like I prefer my communications monopolies. Bell.
Dumb.
Fuck you. I'm hilarious.
Can we talk about that? That was actually kind of okay.
Don't acknowledge it.
Can we talk about, what was I going to say? Oh yeah, can we talk about how much green bell peppers suck?
Oh, God, dude. Yeah, I'm not a fan regardless.
They're so pointless. Hey, let's take this unripened pepper that tastes like nothing.
I didn't know that for so long. Like, all bell peppers are the same species. They just pick up at different points of ripeness and sell them.
I knew that because as a Cuban, we are born with said knowledge.
So, and as a Turk, we don't know shit about bell peppers. Yeah, we've got a completely different species of peppers in our home country.
No, man, I'm telling you, it's, green bell peppers are pointless. Leave it on the vine. Let it become.
Oh, and by the way, for anyone listening who isn't already our close friend, Dan and I are going to Istanbul this March. So there'll probably be a few episodes in between this and that, but
no, you should save it for the episode, damn it.
Well, we'll make an episode there with Raku instead.
That's my point, is that you gotta save it and be like, we're in fucking Turkey, motherfuckers, like just out of nowhere.
Well, maybe we can edit this bit out. We'll see what Soderberg thinks.
I don't care.
Anyway, I'm gonna introduce Dan to the magic of Turkish peppers because he will love those things.
I will love everything. In that
yeah, game. you're gonna love it, except for the bombings. But not really, because it's a real threat, and we need to worry about it.
Can we briefly mention how the fucking day I wanted to and did buy the ticket, there was, and like the ISIS bombing happened.
There was a huge bombing in Istanbul near the Blue Mosque, and it killed a ton of tourists.
It was only 10.
You know, Dan, to his credit, wasn't like, all right, let's rethink this. He was like, well, tickets get cheaper.
I was like, no, one of my tweets that day was like, thanks, ISIS, for fucking up my paid vacation.
But you still love the tickets. Oh, I can't believe we're going. You'll be the first person I've ever taken to Turkey.
I'll be the first person to ever go to Turkey with another what? No.
Yes, you'll be the pioneer that's the first person to go to Turkey with another human being.
Note to self, don't drunkenly improvise sentences.
Good luck with that, yeah?
No, it'll be my first time. I mean, like, the last time I went to the European continent was 2006, man. It's been a decade.
Fuck, man. Where did you go?
Spain. That's the only place in the European continent I've been.
Oh, shit.
To see family.
Well, Turkey's not going to be that different, I guess. I mean, Italians and Spaniards are pretty close to Turks in that they're all economically not well off. I mean, to be fair, Turkey's gotten better. Like,
yeah, the unemployment rate in Turkey is not 25% right now.
Oh, Jesus. Spain is a shit show.
Yeah, and for people our age, 30 and under, it's
50%. Yeah, I mean,
50%, Burke! That's a lot! Half of people under 30 are unemployed! That's a lot of people.
Yeah, dude. And are they on the dole? That's the real question.
Oh, it's so sad.
Anyway, this isn't welfare Kila. This is tequila, bitches.
No, this is that's the point. Is we drunk and we talk about shit. Anyway,
we're talking about
Minority Report.
Yeah. I mean, I talked a lot. Do you have an opinion?
I don't know what to think. I literally just read it like 10 minutes before we started this shit. So
preparation, ladies and gentlemen.
So I don't know. Honestly. Like, it seems interesting. I don't know how, like, foolproof it is. I mean, so there is a level of, like, there is a level of prejudicial, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't mean prejudice in the sense of, like, race or socioeconomics. I mean prejudicial in the sense of, like, you were prematurely...
Yeah,
making labels. A judgment on this person's character.
Yeah, and a really interesting thing that's mentioned is, like, in Chicago, there's a similar system called the Heat List, and you know, they do the same thing except for with adult former inmates. And what they do is they look at whether or not they've offended before, and then they visit them. Social workers visit them,
right?
And then, in addition to that, cops visit them, and that is the most alarming aspect of it. Is that, you know, this predictive system isn't only being used to help people. You know, cops are showing up, detectives are showing up on their doorstep and saying, "Hey, we're watching you. We'll bring down the hammer if you do it again."
Let me put this in context. I've lived in Chicago for a year now.
Yeah,
I in my previous apartment, I lived in like a fairly like. Normal neighborhood. I live near Wrigley Field. I was walking through my alley to work one day, and in the alley, I look on the ground and I see a 9mm bullet, like, not shot, still in the case. And I picked that up and I was like, I guess I'm doing my part. Helping people.
Don't litter, people. Don't mess with Illinois.
I don't know. Okay. And then now I moved in December. To a new apartment that's a little further north, and it's for anyone who knows the area, I live like a block from the Argyle Red Line stop, which is only like a mile north of where I lived previously. And one time I was getting ready for work. This was very recently. This was like a little less than a month ago. I was getting ready for work, and as I'm getting ready for work, I look out the window and I saw Burke. I don't think I told you this.
No, I haven't. This is an entirely new story to me, but please continue.
I saw six undercover cop cars pull up in my alley, like as I'm getting dressed for work, and I'm like, I paused in the middle of getting dressed for work because we got like, I don't know how many, you know, like some of them are SUVs, some of them are sedans, but however many cops that amount of cars fits, all bust out. The front, the vanguard of which are carrying a fucking battering ram. they go to the apartment across the alley from me that has, so imagine like, you know, like your normal three.
So a trap floors. House is what you're going for?
No, not even. It's like a nice apartment. Like imagine your regular 3-4-story apartment complex. And in Chicago, the back patios are like made of wood, right? And they have stairs. You go upstairs and, you know, you take the back door into your apartment, right? And
it's just, yeah, sure.
Like a small patio with like, you know, plants and chairs and shit. And so I see them go into the patio, like entrance, wooden, whatever, entrance of a building across the alley from me. And they go up to the second floor on the left side and they fucking batter the door down.
No warning, just like, no, here we are, bitches.
Like they literally go up like all like.
I mean, stealth. My trap house theory is proving pretty valid here.
No, they go in like super stealth. They just do it. Guns drawn. Guns fucking drawn. And this is the point where I'm like, holy shit. One, I might be late for work. Let me put some clothes on.
Fuck, two, that's like urban living at its finest.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm going to be late for work because the cops are raiding my neighbors.
Yeah. Two, I didn't want to see that shit. Like, I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And so like, I look back after getting all my clothes on and I look back and I see, so like, you know, behind the apartment complex itself is a small parking lot. And at the entrance of the parking lot, you know, where the chain link fence opens, there are like 4 or 5 cops standing there because they closed off the perimeter earlier.
All right, Dan, I hate to interrupt you, but we've got 8 seconds.
Oh, well, let me just pour the shot then. And then I'll continue my story after the shot. Oh, gotta pour this motherfucker. All right.
3.
Wait.
2.
Wait.
All right.
Okay, now I'm ready.
3, 2, 1, urban violence.
Jalapenos.
Oh, God. It never gets good. Like, it never gets bearable.
You should try the jalapeno thing, man. It kind of helps.
No, dude. I hate spicy foods. It's only going to make my life worse. If this was whiskey, I could just sip, but it's not.
No, it's
it's
not.
Tequila.
We're shooting it. So, quick end to the story. I look back after all my clothes are on, and I see these like 4 or 5 cops at the you know, enclosure of the chain link fence that that closes off the parking lot. And I can only imagine, like, they look super nonchalant, and I can only imagine their conversation being like, "Hey, like, what'd you do last night?" It's like, "Oh, I had some chicken wings." It's like, "Oh, what'd you do?" "Oh, I fucked my wife." Like, I can't, you know what I mean? Just like, they're just clearly shooting the shit. And
they're like, "All right, time to beat this door down."
Oh, that was like post door beating, and it had clearly calmed down.
Oh, shit.
At that point. It was like 5 minutes later. And then I looked up at the balcony or whatever, the patio, and I saw this girl who was like in a blanket and talking to cops. So they had clearly like raided the place, and her boyfriend or whatever, or girlfriend maybe, was like probably a drug dealer.
And in the middle of penetrating her.
Yeah, in the middle of just like sleepy morning cuddling, they fucking ran into their room, guns drawn, and she like may or may not have had clothes on under the blanket. I was like, holy shit. And I had to walk by that on the way to the street to go to the train, and I was just like, yeah, morning, cop. Like, morning, officer.
Hello, like, officers.
Just keep going. Like, don't make much eye contact.
Shit, man. For a guy who grew up in, like, white bread urban suburbia, that is a great story. I have no idea how to relate to that.
Yeah. That's, all right. Welcome to Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, shit.
So I just wanted to provide context to, like, you know, like, you were like, and the cops show up at your door, and I was like, man, that's not much for here. Like, that ain't shit. That is not much.
Oh, man, I don't know how to relate this back to the story, so we're just going to move on.
I know. I'm just saying, if, like, cops showed up at my door, I'd be like, hello, officer. You know, like, what?
Would you like some tea?
Yeah. This is friendly compared to what I've seen. Oh, man. And I can't imagine, like, being black and living in, like, the black neighborhoods and... Because there's been some shit happening in those neighborhoods.
Yeah, culturally, like, regardless of who you are and where you come from, it must be freaky to have cops show up on your doorstep with really, like, no valid reason. They're just there because we suspect you might be a delinquent and you might be fucking up society.
Right. Despite your color, but I feel like if you're black, you feel even worse.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, you know, black people already have some of the roughest lives in society, and now they're being singled out ahead of time, Minority Report style.
And in, like, Chicago, yeah, it's awful. Pretty bad. Like, in Chicago, there was a fucking unarmed black teen killed a year ago by cops.
Yeah, and that's, like, that's not even news for black people. That's like, oh, shit, son.
It's like, yeah, another person. Yeah, like, yeah, it sucks. Yeah,
I mean, it's awful. It's fucking awful. They've lived as, like, well, you know, I say they, but, I mean, there's a huge subset of people of color.
People of color. People, like, covered in blankets who will...
There's a subset of blanket people that have lived as second-rate citizens of society.
No, yeah, black people have...
Man, like, Bernie 2016, do it for the blanket people. Right.
I love how much Bernie sounds like Larry Davis.
I saw the best highlight or the best headline in The Onion the other day, and it's like, Bernie Sanders aggressively slouches so hard he breaks the podium at Democratic debate. It's crazy. I've seen videos of him running to catch the subway, and he's slouching so hard, I'm surprised he doesn't fall down.
He's like, look, I'm going to vote for him. But
yeah,
like, I will. He's the best candidate, in my opinion. But he's also, like, a really funny looking human being.
I mean, he's like the definition of old Jewish guy, and it's great. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. And I'm Turkish.
Five of them, not six.
No, not six.
yeah. Okay. So. What were we talking about? Where are we?
I don't know, man. So for context, I'm editing the Google Doc to say some obscene shit, and you really shouldn't worry about it too much.
Five of them, not six. Anyway,
five dicks, ladies and gentlemen.
You wanna talk about R and how much you hate it, or no?
Well, I mean, okay. So I'm gonna kind of make a segue. Here, a nice logical segue. So I know, like, you know, I do a little. Fuck you.
No hoverboards, just segues.
So I do a bit of data analysis as part of my major. You know, I
he's a neuroscience major. His last name's Gerchuk.
Yeah, neuroscience Gerchuk here, specializing in the computational aspect of it. I did 8 or 9 months in a computational lab, and it was really interesting work, you know? Essentially,
what does that mean? I don't know what that means.
So the computational aspect of any field, particularly in biology, is simulations. So in my lab, at least, we simulated the human brain's ability to position its bells.
To position its bells.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of bells, and we don't know what to do with them. Oh, and my mouth tastes like tequila. We worked on how human brains position themselves in 3D space, and we do it by essentially simulating different ways that the brain could do it, and then in the hopes that, you know, one of these ways would be an accurate representation of how the human brain does it.
Okay.
But in the course of learning how to do this, I learned a lot about data analysis. And this this bit on the Los Angeles County method of telling whether or not kids are going to be hood members, it struck a chord because, you know, potentially if you use data analysis, it's a really, really potent way of telling whether or not someone is going to get into a bad life and intervening ahead of time. But it's also ethically a fucking minefield. Like,
right.
There's no way of doing this that will not seem sketchy as fuck. Mm-hmm, and nonetheless, mm-hmm. we're doing it. And, you know, I have a lot of support for the method, but I don't have a lot of support for the ethics.
It depends on your approach, right? So, like, if your approach is from a, like, not only preventative, but also rehabilitational.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the criminal justice system is allegedly a rehabilitation process. And this is great.
Oh, in America, absolutely not. Like, it's supposed to be.
I mean, fuck no. Not in reality. But we're not talking about reality here. We're talking about theory, bitches.
Like, hey, you have, like, 3 grams of pot. Intent to sell. Go to jail. Mandatory minimum. Like, what, 10
Do
years?
Do not pass go. Yeah. $10,000 to $20,000.
Like, bitch, I was just smoking 3 grams. 3 grams of pot
is nothing.
Just
smoking away from, mate.
3 grams of pot is nothing. Like,
dude, it's
that charge if you have a pound. Like,
yeah, if you have a pound, a scale, and, like, you know, a whole bag of heroin on you, maybe. But if you're going to jail for 10 years, I need a better reason than, like, I want to get high, Your Honor.
Look, if you have heroin, you should probably go to jail if you're selling heroin.
Heroin's fucking terrible. Like, it's part of the reason that the death rate among youths in the U.S. has risen to an all-time high.
Yeah, there's actually, this is super off topic, but recently a guy who was a grade above me in my high school, 2010, fucking died from an overdose on, I don't know if it was painkillers or heroin. I think it was heroin, though.
Yeah, I mean, painkillers and heroin are inextricably linked.
Of course they are.
You know, heroin's a logical
conclusion. Same, like, base thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, fundamentally, they're both
Most anyway. Come from opium.
They're both downers. They're both inhibitory drugs that help people who otherwise have anxiety or problems in their lives feel better about it.
Right. They're both, and most painkillers chemically are from poppy, as is opium.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
as
true.
Is heroin.
Heroin and opium. I mean, they're both fundamentally the same. The only difference with heroin and opium is that heroin involves some extra chemical processing steps, whereas opium is a natural product. But yeah, it's a huge epidemic, and fuck if I know where I was going with this.
Yeah, whatever. Let's
shot. We're actually at the point 20 minutes in. We need another shot. Prepare your body.
Let me pour it.
You need to pour these things following the last shot.
You know what? I do this to, like, ready myself. I don't know what I'm saying. Let me pour.
Yeah, I mean, there's no. You don't have to explain it, baby. I understand.
All right,
buddy.
Oh, there's a jalapeno seed floating in mine.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Underprivileged youths.
I just shot. There was, like, a little jalapeno seed floating in my shot.
Oh. You should shit in a garden and plant your poop and grow jalapenos.
You know how cold it is in Chicago right now?
It doesn't preclude feces gardens.
It precludes jalapeno growing. It's okay. And this is warm, mind you. Let me tell you how cold it is, and I feel good about it.
And also keep in mind that I live in Texas, and this is
okay. Check this out. This is warm. I wore my spring jacket today and just a button down. It was 27 today.
Oh my god!
I have 31.
Oh
yeah,
you're gonna love turkey
today. This was turkey. Warm.
I've been getting Snapchats from Dan periodically, and some of them have been in, like, below 0 degrees Fahrenheit weather.
One of them was me waking up, I think it was Monday of this week. Today is Friday for context. Monday the, what was it, the 15th or so,
the 22nd. Good job on that.
Wait, what's today's date? Today's
the 22nd.
No, I mean, what was Monday's date?
Oh, today's, like, Friday.
The 17th.
Five. Yeah, the 17th.
Yeah. Right. So the 17th, I woke up, and it was so cold. Like, it just, like, seeps into your room, and it was like -2. And I had Snapchatted him and a couple other friends with the -2 Snapchat, like, no, don't want.
And so I've like been biking to school today, and it's, God, I don't even know what the fucking temperature is. It's probably in the 50s, and I was like, this is miserable. I'm going to die.
No, it's not. The 50s is glorious. Okay, let me, context. As soon as it hits the 40s, like once the upward trend happens and spring starts coming, as soon as it hits the 40s here, people literally wear shorts. I'm not kidding or exacerbating or exaggerating or whatever fucking word you want to use.
Oh, God.
Literally, people wear shorts and sometimes flip-flops in the 40s. It's fucking ridiculous.
So I was at, to, for context, or just as a preface to whoever is listening, all like two of you or one of you, I was in Turkey this past winter, and in Turkey, it's not that different from Texas. I'd probably put it on equal footing with South Carolina. It was 16 in Istanbul, and they had a snowstorm, and the entire airport was fucking shut down.
What is that? What is that in American degrees?
No, it was 16 Fahrenheit. It was negative something Celsius. I don't remember. Maybe -6, -7. And the airport was shut down. My flight was delayed by 5 hours.
They're just like, what do we do? Wait,
we had these de-icing trucks, like these crazy-ass little booths on a cherry picker that would spray down the play wings. We still waited 2 hours for that shit. It was awful.
I had a buddy of Sadie and mine who does is in the neuroscience program at Northwestern up here. He's Salvadoranian. And
is that how you say it?
Salvadorian? Salvadorian.
Yeah, that's a little English. Better.
In Spanish, it's Salvadoranio. Anyway.
Salvadoranio.
Salvadoranio.
That N, that's a Y.
He and I speak Spanish. And one day, the first day it snowed in Chicago, which was in like November, he texted me. He lived in Texas like all his life. He texted me as a joke in Spanish. Yo, what the fuck is this white shit falling from the sky? That's really funny. It's pretty fucking funny.
I mean, what? How far is El Salvador from the equator? Not that far.
It's well, Salvador is like around like Guatemala and shit. It's not too far. I mean, it's closer than America, that's for sure.
I mean, it's worse than Texas, which is absolutely fucking bad. I haven't seen snow in like 5 years.
It's worse than Cuba. Like, it's way closer.
Oh,
than Cuba.
God, yeah. Anyway, we should probably get back on topic, shouldn't we?
Did you want to talk about R at all or no?
Yeah, sure. So for those not in the know, I am, since I'm a computational neuroscience major, I've been learning, I take two classes. One is computational biology and bioinformatics, and the other is applied linear regression analysis. And in both of them, I'm having to learn R. And it's interesting. R is a programming language. It's more oriented towards statistics than any other programming language.
Yeah. And can you illustrate just, I mean, from my uneducated point of view, how, to me, it sounds really, like, archaic.
So let's say the Sesame Street is R, and then, like, Proust is any other programming language.
Wait, what the fuck is Proust? Is,
seriously? You don't know Proust?
I don't know what that is.
Proust is a very literary author. Proust.
I'm a plebeian.
You fucking pleb. You fucking amateur pleb.
I'm a Philistine.
Anyway, regardless, Proust is it's a very high-level programming language, which in programming languages means it's low-level. And regardless, it's easy.
Yeah.
No, Proust isn't. Proust is not easy. Twilight is easy. There so anyways, go. Like, I'm learning this low-level programming or high-level programming language, which is very easy, and I have experience in, like, C, which is low-level as shit.
Yeah. And okay. From what I've heard, like, functionally, what R can accomplish is can be accomplished by, like, fucking Python.
Yeah, Python is easy, but, like, the thing is, the amount of effort you have to put in Python versus R is much higher.
Oh,
and R is very useful. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you want to do statistics-oriented stuff or psychology-oriented stuff, R is extremely useful because it has all these built-in functions that are extremely easy to utilize, and you know anyone can do it. So I'm learning R, and I forgot where I was going with this yet again. This is like fourth or fifth time.
You were like complaining about it earlier.
So I know MATLAB very well. I spent 8 months in a lab that utilizes primarily MATLAB, and I've had to use MATLAB in the context of large-scale supercomputer, very parallel programming, put it that way. I take like a given script in MATLAB, which isn't very amenable to large-scale computing, and I've had to chop up a simulation space and put it into a level that I can split across multiple computers. And R is even higher level than that, which means it's a little easier to deal with. And essentially R is, it's easy, it's very useful. Like that's the flip side of dealing with a programming language that's high level. It's very purpose oriented, and R is far better for people who are in, you know, fields where only statistical analyses are applicable. And right. I enjoyed it a lot, to be honest with you. Like it's very useful if you only want to provide analyses of a data set. Dan, please pick up.
I have nothing to say about this.
You know Python, right? You've picked up a little Python?
No, I've never even looked at it. XML? I know of it, and I know like vaguely about how it works.
Python is general. Python is the epitome of general. Like you can do a whole lot of shit with Python. It's not specific, and you can do it all fairly well. MATLAB is scientifically and technically oriented. Not technically. MATLAB is scientifically oriented. You can do a whole lot with it in the context of dealing with mathematical equations, and we have 45 seconds before the next shot.
Oh, shit.
I'm dying.
I'm just going to say oh, shit for the next 45 seconds.
Keep going. I'm not stopping you.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Man, oh, you stop now?
So we've lost all three listeners with that.
I really hope that you didn't have headphones on because that was fucking awful. Damn, pour your next shot.
I'm pouring it
right now. It's time.
I'm pouring.
I just tried to pull the cap off of an empty bottle of 512 tequila.
Oh my god, these jalapenos. Okay,
so 512 tequila, please pay me money. I'm endorsing your brand with my horrific drunkenness.
Oh my god, yeah. Can we please like get a, that would be great if we could get a tequila sponsor. Second episode in.
If we could get like $2 per person for both Dan and me, I would be so content.
No, if I could have a $2 towards this tequila bottle for this episode,
fuck it. I'd be like $30 and I'd be okay with that.
I mean, like, it's better than nothing.
Oh god, I left a tequila bottle from last episode in Houston. I'm currently in Austin, and
as you should be, because fuck Houston. Anyway,
dude, god, yeah. I mean, like, all right, hey, for hey, the one I'm listener talking. Listening, like,
shot.
Houston's a fantastic. Huh?
Oh. No more talking.
3, 2, 1. Unrelated conversations.
Now you can talk about Houston. Ow, this burns. Oh.
I need a towel to wipe up my bitter tears.
This makes breathing in that much more Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, libertarian icon of the Democratic Party. I haven't been this drunk.
I fucking love Bernie Sanders.
I'm texting my girlfriend.
No, put the phone. You can text after the podcast.
Fine. All right.
Topics. Okay, are you ready?
I don't know.
No, I know. Are you ready?
Dicks all over my face? That's all I see on the page.
Oh, that you wrote that.
Well, I have no response to that.
Five, specifically. This is
you wrote before. Five? Why did you write five?
You wrote five, motherfucker. No. What was it, me?
Well, let's get your cursor on it. All right. So, coding languages. Dan, what do you have experience in?
What have I experience in? Like, barely Java. I, like, wrote a rudimentary Android app. Otherwise, web languages. Coding-wise, technically HTML and CSS don't count as coding. I have limited experience with JavaScript, and that's it.
Well, I mean, all I have experience with, really, in a fun, like, I'm fluent in MATLAB. I am proficient in Perl and C.
Perl, really?
And yeah. Nice. So for those not in the know, I worked with the TAC, which is the Texas Advanced Supercomputing Cunt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Impressive.
No, it's a Texas Advanced Computing Center.
There you go.
They have two supercomputers, the Longhorn and Lone Star. And as part of my last laboratory work, I worked with Lone Star and Stampede. And as a result, I had to learn Perl and C. And I've had, you know, a moderate amount of experience with both. And penises. I don't know what to say from here.
Can we transition to one of my topics?
Yeah.
First off, can we talk about something random and then one of my topics?
Hey, man, you've got the reins.
Okay, so I'm drinking jalapeno tequila, correct? Today,
I can't verify or deny that.
You're right. I just wanted to say correct because it sounds cool. Today,
fun. All right, to preface this, I am far more drunk than I was last time. I have barely any recognition of my surroundings.
Okay, but
I'm about to step outside for a cigarette.
Today is Wilbur Scoville's 151st birthday. The man who invented the Scoville scale, the spice scale.
The spicy scale.
Yeah, it's his birthday today.
And you're trying to point that out.
Today's
is Google recognizing it? That's the
yeah. It's on Google. It's on Google. It's awesome. The Google has a little like short clip. It's pretty sweet. I'm gonna play it real quick. Oh my god! Yeah, it's just like a doctor or a man in a lab coat eating spicy things and then ice cream after and like rating them, like bell pepper, none, and then like next, so jalapeno, ow. Oh my god, and now there's a game! Wait, there's a fucking game! Oh my god, this is
ladies and gentlemen, we're doing this live. Like, you can tell we don't know what we're doing.
Okay, so he ate jalapeno and then frantically had like a face of like, ow, and then ate the ice cream immediately. And so now the game after, you have to like click, and then the ice cream throws a piece of itself. The cone is like has a face on it, and it's throwing one of the scoops at the jalapeno, and the jalapeno is like, "Nah, bro, come at me, bro." And then you ice the jalapeno, and then Mr. Scoville is like, "Oh, thank God!" And now he's eating.
Oh, thank God for the ice cream.
Yeah, now he's eating something else.
I can't handle my life.
What did he eat? He ate a cayenne pepper.
First peppers to travel in space.
Okay, I'm quitting this. Point being, it's really cool. Okay, let's move on to the next topic.
All right, so topics wise, we are talking about Planet X.
No, before that, I wanted to talk
the Apple design giving a bad name.
There was this Fast Company article, and I love Fast Company because they have a really cool design article section.
And I love Fast Company because the people who wrote this article are extremely eminent and very well versed in their field.
Yeah, no, they're fucking awesome. That's why I love.
One of the guys worked for Apple before Steve Jobs reintroduced himself in 1999.
Yeah, I mean they've been around forever, and I love. I'm a designer. That's what I'm doing in Chicago right now. And
he is in the advertising industry.
Yeah. I work at a small marketing firm, and I'm within the next like year or two, I want to try to transition into a like a user interface role, like digital design, like web and app designs.
I have to note for the record here that Dan and I know each other from living next to each other.
Yeah, we lived in the same fucking apartment complex, like right next
and
to each other.
And we developed a pretty deep friendship based on that.
A pretty beef friendship.
Beef. Tenderloin,
pretty,
specifically.
Pretty beef tenderloin friendship. So, yeah, yes, I can concur. This article, the title of the article that I wanted to talk about was How Apple is Giving Design a Bad Name. And I personally, I have to disclose my bias, you know, being one of my degrees is journalism. So I have to, you know, like bias is a big deal in journalism. And I personally am an Android fanboy, but otherwise I would describe myself as a technology agnostic. I like using anything that is good and cool. And
to describe my own fanboyism, I enjoy Android in the face of mobile operating systems. But as far as like proper desktop. I enjoy Unix. Like the lab I worked in. Yeah, no, I do. Unix is very easy to use. It makes sense. The Linux operating system and the Unix operating system are both based on the same set of commands, and so it makes much more sense. Huh?
By Unix, you're referring to Mac, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so well, just clarifying.
And Linux and Unix are very similar in terms of the core commands.
They're the same shit.
Yeah, they really are. Linux was essentially an open source variant of Unix.
Yeah.
Which was a, I forget which company it was proprietary to, but
it's very
proprietary.
But the point being, we're like tech agnostics. Like, we just like using shit that is cool and simple and fun to use. And so, like, I have a Mac. But I also use Windows. You know, I go back and forth. I once in a blue moon, and by blue moon mean like in a year, I'll use Ubuntu like once a year, tops.
Damn, the two shots before the episode really made a difference. I cannot function right now.
But okay, so the article the article is about how burps.
Fucking just call me Burps from now on. I can deal with that.
Burp. Your name is Burp.
All right. I mean, fuck it. You know, I've heard worse things. Hamburger.
Oh, that's
Hamburg.
Mean.
Go fuck yourself.
As long as they don't say like, "Hey, you dirty Muslim piece of shit."
I'm not Muslim. I only have that recorded on my passport as my official religion.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
For all those who aren't in the know, I am a dual citizen. I am a citizen of the United States of America and as well as the Turkish Republic.
There you go, the United Turkish Republic.
Well, I mean, that's not too far off the mark.
Fair enough. Wait, how do you get fucking Turkish citizenship when you're not born there? Because your parents?
Essentially, if both parents are Turkish citizens, you are inducted into the Turkish monarchy.
Cult.
Except for the monarchy is Erdogan, and it's pretty fucked up. Anyway, continue.
Okay, so the article is called How Apple is Giving Design a Bad Name. It was really interesting. I mean, so the general point was that and I will concede this because I agree. Generally speaking, Apple's hardware design, Johnny Ive in general, is still spectacular. Like, if you look at the iPhone 6, it's fucking beautiful.
But that's all it stands up to is a initial look. Like, once you get into it.
The hardware is what still looks good. The software, their software design, and I've felt this way for a few years, is waning. And you can see that for instance, the original debacle with the Apple Maps being released and it being utter shit. It was absolute shit.
There's no way around it. Like, Google Maps, by precedent of its being around for longer, was better. Eclipsed Apple Maps.
Was better. And it just worked. And Apple Maps didn't work. And it was because, like, Apple could make a sick phone, but their Maps app just didn't fucking work. It literally did not work. And
it would lead you off the edge of a cliff.
Yeah.
If it was given the chance to.
Yeah. And to be fair, they've fixed that. But what this article talks about is how previously, you know, since Steve Jobs joined Apple again in the 90s, and between
1999!
Between then and his death, how Apple kind of championed user experience and user interface design, which is what I want to go into. They recently have kind of stopped championing it.
What they're more focused on is this sort of Bauhaus-centric, like absolute minimalist design in the face of even sacrificing elements of user interface and accessibility.
Yes.
And like being able to understand user interface in a very intuitive, natural way.
Right.
Like what they force you to think is that user interface, whenever you don't understand an element of Apple design, is your fault. Instead of being an element of like, they did a bad job designing this thing.
Right. Right. So the article more or less is mentioning that Apple now is kind of flying in the face of their old selves and focusing more on the pretty aspect of design as opposed to the ease of use aspect, which is what made them so popular in the first place. And I 100% agree with this. There's a lot to be said for kind of like user-friendly ease of use software. And that is, in my opinion, you know, Apple popularized it, but now they are kind of not anymore. And I think that is going to be the future in general, is just ease of, you know, making software as easy to use and as understandable as possible for everyone. And Apple's kind of sacrificing that. If you, I personally don't, but I've seen it. If you are still a user of iTunes, you know exactly what the fuck I'm talking about, because iTunes has become this behemoth of like archaic features that they can't quite phase out because they don't have the balls to phase out. And it's just this like, you know, new features, old features, and this just behemoth program that is really hard to navigate. Like, you don't know what the fuck is where when you're using iTunes. It's like, where are my songs? Where are my podcasts? I don't know. Where are the podcasts I've downloaded? Where are the podcasts I haven't streamed? It's all like a huge pain in the dick to use. And that's kind of where Apple software has been going, because they're focusing on the aesthetic aspect as opposed to the ease of use.
They're so focused on the minimalist aspect of Apple design that they've forgone all of the essential aspects of Apple design that made the iPhone and subsequent iOS releases
like awesome,
very successful among people who are older and don't necessarily have this drive to understand new technology. Google it, for fuck's sake.
That's how I learn everything. I Google it.
Even with like, you know, I'm learning this new programming language that's absolutely a necessity among statistical or data analytical types in the scientific field. And the only real way to learn it is to Google your problems.
Yes.
I've had two professors tell me that. Like, you need to Google it if you don't know what's going on.
Let me say it as a designer, same thing. Like,
yeah, like, it's really fundamentally
Photoshop
like
behaving funny. How do I make it do this? And then you find your answer.
And it shouldn't be that way. It should be immediately obvious, no matter how drunk you are, whether or not you need to use Google for this problem. And Apple has failed in that respect, which used to be its biggest strong point. My mother, my father, both of them use Apple in a situation where, you know, my dad is a management information systems professor. But my mother, she studies chemical engineering. She doesn't care whether or not it's usable or not. She cares whether or not it's something she can approach without a sense of intimidation. Yeah, like, and that's not the case with Apple. Not anymore, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Like in the past like 2-3 years, they've gone from like, hey man, this is super easy to use and I can like do it to use
hey,
it to
Dan.
Do whatever I want.
It's time for the next shot.
Oh man. Stop playing up your drunkenness. You're not that drunk.
I can provide a very valid debate against that, okay, based on how drunk I am.
All right, shut the fuck up and take the shot. Here.
3, 2, 1. Incoherent drunken conversation.
We should next time do like a
video. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Hey, man, I'm used to it. The tequila. The jalapeno has kind of like made me numb to the alcohol.
The alcohol has made me numb to the alcohol.
Has it?
Jesus Christ. My roommate is trying to get me to go out after this. You think I'm functional? Do you think I'm a member of society at this level of alcoholism?
Yep. If I still lived in Austin, in the apartment complex in which we lived, I would...
God damn, I wish you did. I wish we could hang out.
I would go out in a heartbeat. My options are, like, stay in or be cold. Like... Those are my options.
It is like 50 degrees outside, and I am not so great.
Bro, it's like 20 right now. Shut the fuck up.
At least you're not a smoker.
That's true. Okay, so you want to move on to the next topic? Next and final topic?
Right.
Are you ready?
How Apple... Planet X.
Yes. Okay, so we opened this podcast talking about space... In a fictional sense. And now we will
I don't have any recollection of
that. We'll close this podcast talking about space in a non-fictional context. So
I'm going to preface this by saying the guy who discovered the new planet.
Mm-hmm. Planet, yes. Go on.
Who is also the man who created the impetus to exclude the planet Pluto from the
and beyond. He's the same one who was like, yo, fellow astronomers, there are other similar sized objects around Pluto. Pluto can't be a fucking planet. Fuck that shit. And then everyone was like, the contestant was like, yeah, you're right. Okay.
You're right. Just cut that shit out. We don't want to hear it.
But, you know, just to be nice, let's call those objects Plutoids.
Plutoids.
That's what they're called.
In the Kuiper Belt, there's Kuiper, a whole lot of Kuiper Plutoids. Belt.
Not Kuiper.
You can call it whatever you want. I'm
call calling it Kuiper Belt.
Get it right. Kuiper Belt. Anyway, so regardless, the Kuiper Belt is this huge Kuiper belt around belt? The edge of... Fuck yourself. I like Queefer. Queefs are a sign that I'm getting laid, and so I'll deal with it.
On that
note, we shouldn't have had alcohol before this.
Keep going. You gotta finish it.
Anyway, so the premise here is that the man who discovered Eris, which is Pluto's binary companion, it's a very small object that was also part of the Kuiper Belt. That Pluto is a part of. Fuck you. So to sort of provide context for this, Dan and I are chatting as well in Google Hangouts, and we're very angry at one another. But so the Kuiper Belt was part of the impetus for declaring Pluto as a non-planet. Very many people who are children of the 90s or the early 2000s would say that this isn't enough of a reason to exclude Pluto from the pantheon of planets.
Or if you're Jerry Smith from Rick and Morty.
Jerry? Rick. Anyway, Ricardo Smith would agree with you. And essentially the premise is that Pluto has been excluded from the pantheon of planets. But based on the observation of a number of Kuiper Belt objects that are part of the extreme outer edge of the solar system, scientists have inferred, and astronomers have inferred, that there's this other planet referred to, you know, vaguely as Planet X, Planet 9, or Planet Fatty, based on who you are and where you are.
Fatty?
You never heard that?
No.
Yeah. Dude, oh, it's great. So the two scientists responsible are a Russian, whose name I don't remember, and Michael Brown, and they're both based in California.
Yeah, they're at Caltech.
And they've both said that this planet they've referred to informally as Planet Fatty, P-H-A-T-A-T-I.
No, really?
Yeah, you know it. You know it, bitch.
Okay, so let me try to explain the way. So basically, there are a couple of things that imply or infer the existence of this particular planet that has, you know, been observed over the course of the past few years. One is that there's like a cluster of objects that I imagine would be similar to moons around this particular
thing.
Yeah,
they're essentially Kuiper objects, and they've been observed in the Kuiper Belt, and you know, they're very small planetoids, but in a collective, like as a result of these six objects, the current astronomers have decided that, you know, their orbits are the product of something that can't be explained by traditional solar mechanics. And they're saying that it must be the result of this object that's roughly the size of 13 or 14 Earths mass-wise.
Yeah. There's that, and there's also... So what I'm talking about is there's actually, like, things that are like, basically orbiting in close range, more or less, around this thing that they're talking about. Like, a cluster of dust and debris that moves in a particular way that would be indicative of, like, a moon. But then,
yeah, there's a lot of objects
we're talking about are like objects that have been influenced by this planet that orbit around the sun, and the only way in those things, the only way that they can explain their orbits, the way that these particular objects orbit, is if there's a large, massive thing out in the Kuiper Belt or the Oort cloud that is influencing their particular, you know, their orbit.
Their orbital schedules. So if you look at it, like, so essentially the scientists who propose this have six Kuiper objects that have orbits that can't be explained by the traditional model of solar mechanics. So these objects have very irregular orbits, and all of their perihelions, or perihelia, which are the closest approach to the sun that they have, are clustered in a single part of solar orbit. And what the scientists has proposed is that it's due to a very massive, like roughly the size of Neptune, object that has an extremely irregular orbit. And for those not familiar, that means that the orbit is the furthest point that it has from the sun is very far away, and the closest point that it has is roughly at the point at which Earth orbits. And this object that they haven't observed directly has influenced all of these orbits of these objects that have been observed over the last 5 or 10 years. And let's see what time it is. Oh, God, we are overdue for a shot, aren't we?
Shit, are we?
By 5 minutes.
Shit, okay, well, let's do a shot. Let me pour it.
Five? Oh, yeah, pour it, bitch.
Hey,
I'm still in, still disappointed in your shot pouring abilities, and I am.
Damn, I'm about to kill this bottle, and it's unfortunate because the jalapenos have not infused all the way. Whatever.
Yeah, I'm halfway through a bottle of 512 tequila, and I am disappointed that I'm such a pussy and I can't handle half a bottle of tequila.
Well, cheers, motherfucker.
Well, here's to the Kuiper Belt. 3, 2, 1, this fucking guy. Oh. Why?
Oh, come on.
All right.
Anyways, the essential premise of this argument is that there's very solid inferential evidence that this planet X exists, but there has been no direct observation. And even though that it's been very well publicized, and people have talked about it a lot, you know, none of the observatories that we have active, whether it be the Hubble Space Telescope or this Mount in Hawaii. Yeah, it's in Hawaii. Nobody cares.
Yeah, but it's owned by the Japanese.
Yeah, Subaru. I think it's Subaru.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're using it in a potentially 5-year-long search
for this fucking planet.
That may be larger than Pluto by like 10 orders of magnitude, but is still nonetheless not observed yet. So it's very irregular in that it's a very elliptic orbit. And it's affected a whole lot of things that we know around the system but haven't told the public about. And I don't, I'm the part of the public, so I don't fucking know about it.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, you are.
I feel like this episode is more in the spirit of tequila as opposed to the prior. You mean like
being just drunk as shit?
Being incomprehensibly shit-faced.
Okay, let's like pick something to talk about and then call it. Like, let's pick something to talk about briefly.
Well, let's, you know, Planet Nine. What do you think this has in the terms of implications for the broader spectrum of humanity's space exploration?
I just think it's cool as fuck. Like, I love the idea of this, like, dark, mysterious planet working. I mean, so, like, something that we haven't mentioned is its orbit is fucking 1,500 years if it exists.
Yeah, I mean, what? So, you know, in terms of... So I'm going to preface this with astronomical units are units
AUs.
Of the Earth's AUs. Are units of the Earth's distance from the sun, which are very familiar to players of EVE Online, if you're among us who are visiting. And 1,500 is an insane number. You know, this planet that potentially exists, potentially does not, you know, there's a lot of skeptics among the astronomical observatory community. And, you know, it could be out there, it could be not. But
wait, to clarify, 1,500 years orbit, the AUs, the closest it gets is something like 500? Ish?
No. It's roughly in the order of Maggie. My neighbor's dog is here. She's so cute. Sorry. So essentially the closest this planet gets is roughly two or three times the radius of Earth's orbit. But when it's the furthest away from the sun, it's roughly 1,400 or 1,500 times the distance of Earth, which radically expands our conception of what it means to be an object in the solar system. Before that, you know, Neptune was the furthest planet from the sun in terms of actually being planetoid sized. And now we're really having to redefine the idea of what consists of inside the solar system and which consists of inside the solar system. I've lost my train of thought.
I mean, yeah. I don't know what else to say. Like, yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, no, this is redefining in the terms of, you know, what consists of our conception of the solar system. There is a certain sphere of magnetic influence that's exerted by the sun. And, you know, when the Voyager space probes were sent out, that's how we defined whether or not they were outside of the solar system or not. But now this Kuiper object that is far more massive than anything we've observed before, you know, Neptune and Daniel, I'm sorry, but it's time for another shot.
Oh, my Jesus.
Yeah.
Is it?
Probably.
Are you sure? You're just saying shit.
It's 1 hour exactly into the second portion of the podcast. You haven't been timing. We're like an hour and a half in.
You haven't been timing it as we should.
I mean, I gotta admit to that. I haven't been timing it. It's probably been like 6 minutes. So why don't we wait until an hour and 3 minutes after? Don't take the shot.
Okay, I poured it though. Tell me that the Zippo you just did was the Zippo I gave you.
No, that's sitting in my drawer because I think I got run over by a small industrial transport in Frankfurt.
Oh, I'm going to kill you.
It's still working. Hey, man, chill. I just ran into my neighbor's parents while drunk.
That's weird. So yeah, what should we say before we call this episode? I feel like it's time to call it. It's been a while.
I guess so. Yeah, it's been exactly an hour and 30 minutes. Thank you for listening to Tequila.
If you listen to this whole thing, holy shit, thank you.
Yeah, what is wrong with your life? How bored are you?
Thanks. You must.
I mean, we've been both shit-faced drunk for like the last 30 minutes at the very least.
Like, you must know us.
Yeah, you must know us in a very intimate sense. Otherwise, it would not make sense that you're following us for this long. Unless by like some point very far down the line we get famous, which is unlikely.
Highly.
Highly unlikely. All right, well, thank you for listening to Tequila, and this is the end of our podcast, and thank you very much for listening, and we are pathetic.